This is Story and Rain Talks, the Story and Rain podcast. I'm Tamara, founder and editor-in-chief. After over 20 years in the fashion and magazine industries, I launched storyandrain.com, a digital fashion, beauty, and lifestyle publication where we're bridging the gap between reading a magazine and shopping its pages. On this podcast, you'll discover the emerging trends and tastemakers that matter right now. As a catalyst for creativity and through candid conversations with our community of cultural arbiters, we're your resource for discovering today's most interesting people, projects, and products. And we'll explore the origins for game-changing ideas and careers. With our high-low approach to style and the belief that there's magic in the mix, we're going to inspire you to live your most stylish life. I've been connected to designer, entrepreneur, best-selling author, and one-time model India Hicks for years, and in a number of ways. As an editor, each time India launched a new collection or collab, I was there to preview it, from bath and body products to jewelry, and more recently, handbags and accessories. India's been an on-air personality for networks from Bravo to the BBC, and in fact, when she was a host for Bravo's Top Design, I was her stylist for her appearance in all those advertisements you saw on television, in magazines, and on billboards. 20 years ago, India left Britain for Harbor Island in the Bahamas, and a few years back, I booked one of her properties there for a birthday trip. Since then, I've gotten a firsthand look at India at home and her unique flair for entertaining. An intimate holiday cocktail party in her home in the Bahamas was centered around a grand Christmas tree that easily transported you to a winter scene in New England or England. She has four books on design and her latest centers on entertaining. India famously came to international attention when she was a bridesmaid to the late Princess Diana, and she comes from not only British but design royalty. Her father was famed interior decorator David Hicks, and her mother is Lady Pamela Hicks, whose father was the last Viceroy of India. India is a woman who's made bold life choices, and her style reflects just that, the ultimate multifaceted creative, a Renaissance woman. There's nothing India touches that isn't dripping in style, coupled with her unique kind of ease. Listen in as we discuss the details around her biggest projects to date, the impact her parents made on her, how and when she found her own niche in style, her experience as a model, how her and partner David spark one another's creativity, how she gets her best ideas, and much, much more. India, thank you for your time. You're in Paris right now. How are things in Paris?
Well, do you know what? It's very funny, actually, because I think Paris is having a stricter lockdown than London. I've just been between the two. Obviously, I was locked down for 7 months on Harbour Island, which is really my home. But
yes,
London is a little bit more easy. In Paris, you have to have a form that you fill out. You can be stopped by the police on the street if you don't. But the difference with Paris is all of the essential shops are still open. And this will make you laugh, Tamara. The essential shops appear to be florists. They're still open.
Of course,
the patisserie is still open, so you can get your croissant. And all the pharmacies, of course, are still open, so you can get all your French makeup. And the wine shops, the booze shops. So between the florist, the patisserie, and the booze, we're set.
I mean, that sounds perfect to me.
Yeah.
India, our podcast is called Conversations with Creatives, and you truly are the ultimate creative, and dare I say Renaissance woman. I don't know if it bothers you when people say that about you. They must say that about you all the time. But let's begin with you naming all of your many creative endeavors, if you can, please.
Gosh.
Exactly.
Well, I think what I have found is that I certainly didn't come out of the gate saying, I'm going to be an interior decorator. I'm going to be a florist. I'm going to be an accessories designer. I came out of the gate with a very famous father who had set the world alight with his designs. And in the 60s and 70s, he really was one of the leading voices in the world of design. And he was very strong in how he designed. So a lot of vibrating color schemes and geometrics and matching old with new. And then I had a very brilliant brother, I still do, who studied architecture, and then he became a designer. And then he was married to a woman who launched a caftan collection and design. And so I was slightly intimidated by this very heavy design background. So I left school and I went to an Outward Bound school in the north of Scotland. And I was like, what am I going to do? Because, you know, my instinct was in the creative world. And so I said, I'll do a photography course because no one in my family is doing photography. So I went and did photography in Boston. And then I fell onto the other side of the camera and became a model. And I thought, well, this isn't going to last. So I'll do this for a little bit. And actually, I really enjoyed that because it allowed me to travel and to meet people I never otherwise would have met. But it was still very much within the creative world. And then I found myself somehow living on Harbour Island, which, as you know very well, is 3 miles long and half mile wide. And it was there that I really suddenly kind of found my own voice in the design world. And I wasn't intimidated by my family's background or feeling that I couldn't possibly live up to expectations. And on Harbour Island, I suddenly found that actually David, my own David, not my father David, my other half and I, we found that we had a voice in it, and it wasn't either British or Bahamian. It was a mix of the two. And so we got involved with renovating a hotel, and then we built a couple of guest houses, and then I wrote some books, and then I felt very comfortable in this voice that I'd found. And so once I felt kind of passionate and relieved and confident, then other things came. So we did, as I said, hotels. I wrote books. I then designed a collection of jewelry for Bloomingdale's. Then I did beauty skincare for Crabtree and Evelyn. Then I did sheets for HSN. So I've had many different chapters in the design world.
Absolutely.
And what I think is interesting is that one thing leads to another. It was never a clear path for me. And I just fell into one thing, and everything's been an experience.
Of all the creative projects you've been a part of, which are the standouts for you and why? I remember them all. I remember going to see your jewelry collection when I was an accessories editor. I remember the Crabtree and Evelyn. Of course, you know, your line of handbags, your direct sales. Is there anything that is of all the creative and the books, I mean, and the sheets, is there anything that really stands out for you?
Well, you touched on the lifestyle brand, and you very generously hosted an evening for me, and I remember it well, in your beautiful home. And that was such an example of what we were trying to build, which was fantastic groups of mixed women coming together, having a wonderful evening, drinking quite a lot. That was a very important part of it. And then feeling that actually they might want to be part of the business and running it in their own way and on their own terms. And I loved my business. And for 6 years, I hustled my ass across America.
Yes.
Encouraging women to feel that actually they could be part of this business because it allowed them really to take control. And I had so many success stories along the way of women saying, oh my God, I never felt I had the confidence. Oh my God, I didn't know how to do a tax return. Oh my God, I never realized that I had the ability to sell. Oh my God, I didn't realize I could give back to charity in this way. That there are an awful lot of women who lose their way when they get to a certain age because their kids are leaving home and their husbands are probably still working very hard in their own businesses. And they're slightly like, what am I going to do now? And this business filled that void. So it really broke my heart when that business closed. I loved it.
It was terrific. I'm still carrying all of your bags. I have both backpacks. I have the backpack in black. I have the backpack.
Oh, I loved
it. Olive. That was such a good travel bag. I loved that collection so much. So we've talked about, you've been a model, you've been an author, home decor and interiors designer, jewelry, accessories. Well, how do you sort of see yourself if you were to put a name on what you are? Is that a lifestyle expert? Is that a founder, entrepreneur?
Ooh, I think expert is a really frightening word. I'm definitely not an expert in anything. I'm certainly not an expert in the kitchen. I can't bloody cook. I think today it is really important. When I think of my kids and what's going on in the world and how mad it all is and how just upside down it all is, you know, the word experience, you know, I've had so many different experiences and all of that kind of paints a picture of who I am, what my voice is, what my beliefs are, how I want to be seen in the world. And it's nice to sort of have these different chapters because you learn from them. And I think then you can you learn more about yourself, and that is important. Of course, being a mother is probably the most important job I've got. I've got five kids, and they're all very different characters. And so that's clearly my main focus. But more recently, about a year and a half ago, we had a very, very devastating hurricane come through the Bahamas. And I was able to get on board with a disaster relief agency. And so I worked for about 4 or 5 months, very closely with trying to rebuild parts of the Bahamas that were devastated. And again, it was a very different chapter of my life. It was nothing to do with creativity or design or any of that superficial side of life, which I love. I love a superficial side of life. But this was very meaningful on a completely different level. And I find it very fulfilling. And in fact, more recently during the pandemic, when the island got locked down, we realized that there would be a lot of very desperate people on Harbour Island, because the Bahamas relies entirely on tourism. And if you shut tourism off virtually overnight, you do have trouble. And so we started a food bank. And again, we worked very hard on raising money and putting a team in place and making sure that that is consistent. It wasn't just a quick month thing. We've done that now for 7 months. Wow. And so I think between these experiences led on to the creativity. I feel really lucky that I was able to do that and to be able to get involved with something so completely different to what I've been doing before.
Yeah.
So even though the past 2 years have been pretty devastating for me, and the fact that I did lose my business and it broke my heart, as I said, we did have an appalling, unprecedented hurricane come through. It actually has made me probably stronger and wiser as a person. And so it's these experiences that have painted the bigger picture for me.
You seem, though, India, I would say, you seem to have been born with a bold, risk-taking attitude. Would you agree? Where do you think that comes from?
Gosh, yes, possibly. I like that, I think. I've definitely lived an unexpected life. I mean, I certainly never imagined that I would end up on a tiny little island in the middle of the Caribbean and have five kids, and one of whom is adopted, a Bahamian son. And there were just lots of things that were not at all where I thought my life would go. I had very extraordinary grandparents. My grandfather was a great war hero and really an exceptional leader and very dynamic and very good looking. And my grandmother was very extraordinary. She was a difficult mother, a very difficult mother, but I never knew her as a grandmother, which is a shame. But she was an exceptional character. And she started her life out as this very frivolous heiress who really just traveled and spent money and had lots of affairs. And then towards the end of her life, she changed completely. During the war, she absolutely found herself, and she found that there was a reason for her being as such. And she became very instrumental during the war effort. And really, at the end of the war, she was the first woman out to the Far East and in those concentration camps and releasing prisoners of war. And she was trekking through the jungle with just an assistant. And it was because she had the money and the contacts and all of the capabilities and the ability and the wisdom and the advice and experience that she had built up during those war years. I would like to think that I have perhaps inherited a little bit of her courageousness.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't like to think that I inherited her mothering skills.
Speaking of mothering, how were your mother and father different from one another, and how were they similar?
Oh my God, they're completely and utterly different. My father was utterly flamboyant. He was a big show off. He was very funny, but he always wanted to be the center of attention. He was fairly narcissistic, as great creators are. He was very decisive. Nothing ever held him back. My mother, on the other hand, absolutely led a life in the shadows. She was in the shadow of her own great parents, who were really on the world stage. She was in the shadow of the Queen. She was a lady in waiting to the Queen. Of course, you're just completely in the shadow. She was the shadow of my father, because of his dazzling career. And she was happy there and is happy. She's 91 and very much alive. Yeah. And she's very happy to have that role. She's not somebody who wants to be center stage, but she's extremely well-read. She's very open-minded. She's unbelievably progressive. And she's fascinating to listen to. not particularly because she's had all these amazing experiences with her own life. She was with Mahatma Gandhi at prayer meetings. She was there in India during independence. She was with the Queen the moment the Queen became Queen. She's had some very tragic and difficult things in her life as well, which has made her very very humble in many respects, but very wise. And I think now at 91, it's amazing when we're able to talk to that generation, because there is so much to be learned from it.
It's a thing to treasure, really. How has she made an impact on you personally?
You know, we're very lucky in the fact that we're very close as mother and daughter. I think we also are quite close, and probably in our characters, and the fact that we share the same sense of humor. We both love to travel. We're both quite adventurous. She was a beautiful horsewoman. She taught me to ride very well. She taught me to water ski. She couldn't cook. I can't cook. She loves to play canasta. I used to play a lot of canasta. I mean, you know, all the ridiculous, frivolous sides of life. But she has a very intense intelligence, but I'm fascinated by her and I learn from her every day. And I will often call her and ask her opinion still at 91.
I love that.
What should I be thinking?
Right.
And she won't tell me, but she'll give me her view. And then I will hopefully come to my own realization.
Even better. And you touched on this a little bit, but when you think back to your childhood, which grand moments of creativity do you recall? Do you have anything sort of burned on your brain in terms of a grand moment of creativity, either something that you witnessed that your father was doing or otherwise?
I grew up in a pretty sensational house, which my parents had to sell fairly quickly because my father managed to drink a lot of the money away. But in that house, he really created this sort of mad design laboratory. And he took a very beautiful Georgian house, and on the interior, he created this just sensational home. It was exactly as an English country house should be. But then he would have this they called it the long room, and it was a music where Wagner was played late at night. And he had all these vibrating color schemes down there, pinks and purples and puces. And my mother said those were not colors for the day, those were only colors for the night. But it was just an amazing room, and there was a grand piano in it, and these wooden busts from Africa, and this beautiful carpet that I remember my feet walking on barefoot. Tufted brown carpet, and it had this purple card table that actually had puzzles laid out on. And as a child, it was very sort of invigorating and exciting to be in this room, because nobody else's home that I visited had anything similar to it. There was none of that excitement or vibrancy. It was just everybody else lived in very normal homes, but my father had created this very exceptional room that was just dazzling.
And how do you and your partner, David, impact or spark one another's creativity? That's a creative partnership too, right?
Well, that's funny actually, because literally I can hear him next door. Living with your partner and working with sometimes can be absolute hell, as we know. And he'll crossly tell me I'm talking too loudly, and I'll tell him he's talking too loudly. But we're lucky in the fact that we share the same aesthetic. Lucky in the fact that we then both want the same interiors and we want to live in the same way. Unlucky in the fact that we both care. So I'll position, you know, a vase on the table in one way, and then he'll come and reposition it slightly. So there's quite a lot of that going on. Whereas in fact, my mother and father worked so well because of course my father made all of the design decisions and my mother sat on her pink sofa reading her book.
And Domino is your youngest child. She's about 13 now, isn't she, India? Is Domino about 13 or no?
She's going to be 13 in December. Yeah,
oh my
13
God.
In December.
Wow. Do you hope she will follow in your footsteps by leading a life filled with adventure and learning?
I love the words adventure and learning, and especially if the two can be married together. She's very creative already. She's extremely organized. When I was traveling a lot, I took her with me. And she was homeschooled for part of it, and she was the best assistant I ever had. She was incredibly organized. She said, "No, you need to get off the call. The Uber is downstairs now." You know, age 9.
Oh, wow!
And yes, very funny, very bossy,
very funny.
But she's, you know, during lockdown, you know, 7 months on the island, she was amazing in the fact that she sort of started this sort of hive of activity, and she became unfortunately very good at deep fried donuts, which my thighs didn't enjoy. And she really? Got a sewing wow. machine. Yeah, no, she was pretty wow. And she started tie-dyeing. She started making jeans and she would alter clothes. And she became very creative. And so that was amazing to see. So I think she will probably end up somewhere in the creative world.
Of course. Oh, now I want to see her jeans. I want to see her tie-dye. Yeah. I want one of those donuts. I love that. Describe your personal style in 3 words, if you can.
Traditional, twisted. Yes. Traditional. I can't give the 3 words. Traditional with a twist. Am I allowed to put
yeah,
the A in
there?
That's
good. That traditional with a twist. And for interiors, 3 words or 2 words, your style?
I would say pretty much the same. Oddly, you know, the way I dress and the way our interiors are probably live fairly comfortably side by side.
Mm-hmm. And your style in entertaining, 3 words or a word or two?
Fun, inviting, warm, and I hope memorable. You know, I talk a lot. I've just got this book out, An Entertaining Story.
We're about to talk about that. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Oh, that's good. And actually, you know, it launched in September and we were still pretty much in lockdown. We were still feeling pretty bruised from everything that was going on. And the book was done way before, obviously, a lockdown or the pandemic started. And when I look actually at the book, an awful lot of it is very relevant for now. I mean, the backbone of it is all about family. It's breakfast in bed, my mother, or tea time, or Christmas lunches with my children growing up over time. And yes, there are obviously some very dramatic pictures of big, long tablescapes with hundreds of guests coming for dinner under palm trees in the Bahamas. But there's an awful lot as well about really making a pretty table. It doesn't have to be a big, dramatic table. And it's about, you know, the art of conversation and placing interesting people next to each other and having a homemade sausage in the midst of it. I like to think it doesn't feel intimidating and it feels pretty accessible. And I think right now what we're looking for is ways of living at home again, ways of entertaining at home again. And even if it's just your 5 children around the table, how does that look? We celebrated, I think, about 3-4 different birthdays during lockdown. And we actually had different evenings for each. And one was a sort of Japanese style evening in the kitchen. One was a barbecue outside. One we played absolutely ridiculous, like 3-year-old birthday games. And we laughed our asses off. And we made wild, different decorated birthday cakes. But it was just us as a family. But we made an effort so that it was memorable.
Yes.
And I hope my kids take that away with them.
Oh, I'm sure they will. What do you think makes a house a home?
David would say pictures and books, and I would say my dogs and my children.
Yes. And we talked a little bit about modeling earlier. How did you get started as a model? You said you enjoyed it, but how did you actually get your start? Do you remember the beginning?
I do very well. My father was having W magazine come down and do an article on him and his garden. And I got a lift with the editor from London out to the countryside. And when we got out of the car, the editor said, actually, I'd really like to do a story on you as an English rose. I was young at the time. And so I did that and it was in W magazine, and Ralph Lauren saw that photograph and then invited me to be part of his next campaign. And it was all so exciting and so romantic and so thrilling. And I did that job with Ralph Lauren, and then I got an agent, and the agent said, hey, you've got another job. And suddenly I found myself in Florida in a Winnebago doing a catalogue, a German catalogue with sort of, you know, 60 shots a day. And it was like, is this really the sensational world of modeling?
Wow. And did you have a most memorable shoot? You also did some work for Banana Republic, is that correct? You and David?
I did,
together?
Yes. Banana Republic and J. Crew and a lot of those wonderful American brands. You know, again, modeling is a funny old world. Now it's a much more professional world, which I think is admirable. But it's, you know, you have to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, some of these girls work very, very hard, indeed. And I certainly worked hard while I was modeling, because you're traveling a great deal and you're adapting to different environments and different teams, and you have to be a different personality in front of the camera. But at the end of the day, you know, you are literally a clothes horse. But what I took away from it was the people that I met, and just amazing people from so many different parts of the world and different walks of life. And I really love that.
Here's a big question. What inspires you?
Probably Mother Nature. I think I've been very lucky to live a very outdoorsy life for most of my life. I grew up in the English countryside. I then lived only part, very small part of my life in cities. I'm not a city person at all. And then for 25 years on an island. And Mother Nature is amazing, absolutely amazing. She's the best designer I know. And I borrow from her all the time. The trunk of a palm tree, the shape of a leaf that's fallen on the ground, the color of a shell, the fish in the sea, just so many amazing, amazing things to be drawn from.
And so you would say that is the kind of beauty in the world that brings you the most joy, the beauty in nature?
Yes, I think so.
How do you get your best ideas when you have them? Is there a way that you get particularly... When do your big ideas come on? Is there a through line?
I tell you exactly how they come. They come when I'm running. I'm a big runner.
I cannot tell you how many people have said the same thing when I ask. I've asked that question of many creatives, and so many people say that about running. So
that's so interesting to hear.
Yes. Yep.
I think probably, and they probably share the same thing, is that, you know, you don't have a phone ringing, you don't have a child asking you a question, you're not having to think what's for lunch. You're literally just there. It's your own headspace, and it's when I'm calmest, and I'm clearest, and I'm probably most inspired then.
Yes. And do you ever record the ideas that you get? And
if yes,
so, if I so, do. Where do you record them? Or I kept thinking about this question. I thought, I bet India is one of these people that just acts on the ideas that she gets. But it's interesting to hear that you record your ideas. And I want to know how and where you do that.
Well, I don't actually record them. I'm so tech bad that I'll sort of stop and write myself an email. And I'll send it to myself. So it's sitting at the top of my inbox when I get home. And that does force me into some form of action.
Yeah, that's perfect. What do you do when you're stuck? Do you have any practice or routine that you use when you're stuck and you're needing to kind of get going?
I've, you know, the great thing about being in one's 50s, and I can never remember if I'm 52 or 53, I have a horrible thing of 53. But the great thing about being in one's 50s is we have by this stage learned some tricks. And I will put whatever it is I'm trying to work on down, or I'll leave it alone, and I'll either go and have a hot bath, or I'll go and watch one quick episode of something literally mindless, like Outlander, which I know I'm very behind on, but I'm just into it, and I'm really into it. And I think that's the time you have to put it aside, give it a break, and then come back to it.
Yes. In what ways are you spontaneous?
Oh God, too many ways. David would actually say that's a terrible fault of mine.
Oh really?
God, I'm very spontaneous. If someone gives me a dare, jump in the swimming pool, cross that river, ride horseback, bareback, I'll do it in a heartbeat. Yeah, spontaneity it comes quite a lot. But I'm also a Virgo, so I'm quite organized and neat with
that. Yes, remind me, India, there's one of the stories in your book tells a story about you doing something very spontaneous on a birthday, right? Something you were.
I'm sure this story is going to go bad. What is it?
No, I'm gonna open up the book and we'll get back to it. I thought it's such a perfect example of spontaneity. Have there been times in your life when your creativity felt challenged?
Oh God, yes. And I tell you exactly when, actually. And it's happened a couple of times. For example, when I was working with Crabtree and Evelyn,
yes,
you come up against the huge challenge that it is what you want against what is actually going to be commercially viable.
It's interesting that you're saying that, because I actually have a question for you about that. But I guess it sort of blends into this other question that I had for you about creativity being challenged. You know, how do you approach product development? Have you had to temper the designs that you're passionate about with what will sell, or have you typically gone into the process creating items you know will sell well? So I guess with Crabtree, you had you were battling that.
Well, I was, because, for instance, you know, Crabtree was on a large scale, you know, and it was global. So you're always balancing what you know, the customer in Sweden wants versus the customer in the Far East. In Sweden, they don't want a fragrance that is overpowering. In the Far East, they want a fragrance that's very overpowering. And you're trying to develop one English rose fragrance for all of those markets. That is a challenge. Valentine's Day, you know, the company wants red on everything because that's going to sell. I'm like, I don't want red on anything. I want a blush pink and a gray. That's Valentine's, you know. Those kinds of disputes and arguments, which is painful. And what you do learn is there has to be a compromise. You have to find a middle ground. Right. And sometimes it's disappointing because you just don't want to put your name on something that has got a pink bow on it. And other times you just realize you've just got to shut your eyes and go for it.
Yep. Is there anything that you've done or created that you wish you did differently? Or do you not look back in that way?
Oh God, I do look back. Yes. Okay. I don't look back and linger, but I definitely look back. And there are times where I look at what was I wearing? Even when I think it's been good, I now look back and go, that was terrible. So that I look back and worry about. And from a design point of view, yes, I mean, you know, you mature all the time and your designs are growing with you. And, you know, the more experience you have, the better you become at it. Like anything, with practice, and you begin to understand your design voice, and I think that's important.
And tastes change. What do you think has been the biggest project that you've taken on to date? What was massive for you?
I have children, is massive, but yeah. My lifestyle brand was a big small business. If you see what I mean, you know, we had 5,000 ambassadors working for the company, and you know, we had these huge weekends where we'd have a couple of thousand women come, and we'd entertain them, and we'd educate them, and we'd learn together, and we'd laugh, and we'd live, and that was it was a massive undertaking, and I really had to learn as I went on it. I loved every minute of it, absolutely every minute of it, but it was massive. It was too big.
Yeah, it was really big. What is your approach to moving through times when a project isn't flowing or seems stalled? Do you have any tips or tricks for that kind of thing? How you've weathered?
When a project's stalled?
Yeah, when a project doesn't seem to be flowing or is stalled.
Well, again, we've mentioned, you know, obviously going for a run and having a hot bath and taking time out from it. But also possibly, you know, sharing the pain, you know, ask somebody else's opinion. It sometimes kickstarts you back into it. When someone tells you something, you then know, no, I don't want that opinion. I know exactly what's wrong with it.
Yes. And what do you think makes you so courageous in acting on your ideas and your vision always? We talked a little bit about that. But it takes quite a lot of courage to design, develop, and put your vision out there.
Yes, it does, particularly when you've had a big bump in the road. You know, I lost my business, and that was, as I said, painful and heartbreaking and demoralizing. And it knocked my confidence hugely. And I questioned a lot after that. You know, am I really a designer? Do I really understand my audience? You know, do people actually value me anymore? But I just kept going. I just kept thinking, I have to keep moving forward. I have to keep moving forward. And I've thought that so much over these past 8 months with the coronavirus. The reason I'm in Paris is because I said to David, I cannot have my life stand still. I cannot let coronavirus win on this. Now, we're lucky enough to have a passport that allows us into Europe. You know, I was already in the UK. I said, let's take advantage of this.
Yes.
Let's go to Paris. Let's rent an affordable apartment because everybody's
out. I get that. Yeah.
So there's a lot of kind of move it forward.
Yeah. Not being stagnant. We talked a little bit about your latest book, An Entertaining Story. We're going to talk a little bit more about it. Do you enjoy the process of putting a book together? I think you have four at this point or five?
Well, I've got three that sit very nicely together that were all published by Rizzoli, and I love that. One is Island Life, one is A Slice of England, Now an Entertaining Story, and they're all the same size, and they look really pretty together on a shelf, and being a Virgo, I like that.
I like that too.
And I love doing the books because I find that actually I love to write. I'm not a very good writer, but I write like I speak, and so hopefully it's very readable. I mean, this book, latest book, takes about 20 minutes on the loo to read, for God's sakes. But hopefully they're easy stories and hopefully enjoyable stories.
And we've talked about the fact that you've built so many brands, direct sales, handbags and accessories, we just talked about. You know, you just closed that business right ahead of the pandemic. Do you think that there are more brand launches in your future, or is that door maybe closed for good at this point?
No door's ever closed. I think that for me, it's a balance as well. You know, now I like concentrating on this entrepreneurial and charitable side, you know, the humanitarian side. And I think that there's something valuable, and I think that I can do something worthwhile there, without sounding all boring and pious, for God's sakes. But I do, and you know, and that's
sort of
very valuable.
Bringing the two together, the charity and the and a brand development project per se. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, and also, you know, from a social media point of view, I have it's a small audience compared to so many, but it's an engaged audience, and if I can share with that audience, you know, ideas about how they can be helping in their community, or how they can be helping if they have a love for the Bahamas, or how they can be helping if they're interested in adopting kids, or whatever it is, then why not, you know?
What do you enjoy most about the brand development process? Like, what would you look forward to once again?
I like the teamwork on it. I like the fact that I'll ask somebody if they can put a tech pack together. I like being part of a team.
Back to your latest book, An Entertaining Story, which was just released. I think it's such a wonderful mix of stories and ideas and elements for entertaining. How did the book first begin to take shape?
Well, oddly, Rizzoli came to me again. We did two books together, and then they said they'd like another book, and they wanted an Instagram book. They wanted a book of all of my sort of Instagram stories and pictures, and it was going to be a very different format and different sizes, and it was all going to be shot by me. And as I started to put that together, I kind of felt that there wasn't a strong enough thread that was holding it together. And then when I really looked at the pictures and the images that I felt were probably most compelling, it was always the entertaining ones. And so it felt that actually that was a stronger story. And so then we said, okay, we're not going to do these small square images. We're going to go for full bleeds. And once we went to full bleeds, then I said, oh, it's a different type of book. And actually, I think that there's more to it than that. And I think it could be kind of breakfast, lunch, tea, supper. I think it's not just this sort of small version, small format book. Actually, interestingly, most of the images are mine, shot on an iPhone. And again, I like that. They are, yes.
You're kidding me. Well, how did I miss that? I looked through this entire book. That's incredible. The photos in this book are incredible. Incredible.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, admittedly, if you look in the back, the majority of mine, but a wonderful friend of mine, Britton, takes quite a few of the images. And then David Loftus, who's a food photographer, took some of the food. But the majority are snapped from my iPhone. And again, of course, you know, now we're living in a world where the iPhones are so sophisticated that they can handle it. But I liked the idea that hopefully made it feel, again, a bit more accessible, the book, and not too intimidating.
Any projects brewing for the future? Or are you just focused on...
Yes, I've got one that's kind of going to be launching in December. Oh. But it's a sort of smaller, more intimate one. Very different, but I'm excited about it.
Are you allowed to talk about it at all?
No, not yet.
Okay. Well,
any minute now.
We will be waiting. So as we close, India, as we wrap up, we always end with a kind of lightning round.
Ooh.
Yes. And I'm very excited to hear your answers to some of these questions, or to all of these questions. Describe a perfect day for you these days.
These days?
These days, yeah.
Knowing that my children are safe and well and happy, is really all I could possibly ask for one day.
Yeah. Favorite fragrance?
The fact that I'm hesitating just reveals it all. I don't have one. When I had my own lifestyle brand, I had one that was called Wild Spider Lily, and I named my boat after that.
I remember that one. Whose style do you admire?
Ooh, a whole mix. You know, Grace Kelly to Elle McPherson. Elle's a mate, and I think she gets it pretty right a lot of the time.
She really
But David would really like me to be dressed as Grace Kelly. Unfortunately, most of the time I'm dressed as a yoga teacher.
Best facial you've ever received?
Ah, easy. And most recently, Onda in London. And there's one in New York, started by Naomi Watts.
Yes.
And it's all about clean beauty. I've never had a facial before. They invited me to take one, and I went back again and again because I was so impressed. And the thing that kept me going was the fact that I slept through it, which was fantastic.
Yes.
I never sleep in the daytime.
Me, I never sleep during those kinds of treatments. Yes. That's great. I love Onda. Go-to sunscreen. You've got to be an expert on this.
Yeah, Beauty Counter. Beauty Counter, which is started by Greg Renfrew, and again, a wonderful brand that's all about clean beauty.
Who makes the best swimsuit?
Melissa Odebash.
Favorite brand or designer for warm weather clothing?
New brand, Hester Bly. Hester Bly, named after two very adventurous women who were very much ahead of their times. Incredible collections, very beautiful cotton, beautifully made. And there's a Palm Beach collection out, and that more recently a Bora Bora collection, and I want nearly every piece from it.
Favorite brand or designer for cold weather clothing? Sweaters and coats.
Oh, probably something super easy like North Face.
Top three, well, cities or travel destinations where you feel most inspired and most creative?
I went to Iceland, and I longed to go back. I hadn't seen enough of the country, but my God, it was beautiful. And it was so exceptional. Costa Rica, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy country, a beautiful landscape, beautiful oceans, amazing people. And of course the Bahamas where I live.
Of course. What makes a hotel great?
Service.
What restaurant must you go to when you come to New York?
That's so hard because there are so many in New York, absolutely so many. And I'm having a craft moment, which means,
okay.
Do you know what craft means?
Yeah, if you had one day in New York, where would you end up? It was a long time ago, right? That we're thinking about restaurants in this way, but
yeah. Absolutely. Downtown for sure. Mm-hmm.
We can move on.
You're going to have to move on. It's on the tip of my tongue. Keep going.
Okay. Favorite thing to eat for lunch?
Ooh. God, bagel and cream cheese.
Very New York. What color do you gravitate towards most in tabletop decor?
Probably a neutral base and then start out from there. Gray or white.
Do you play music at home?
No, I'm inundated by my kids' music.
Are you currently reading anything or binge watching anything? You mentioned Outlander.
I'm binge watching Outlander, which is, you know, shows how behind the times I am. And I'm reading a book called Golden Child by Claire Adam, which is actually extraordinary.
India, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I look forward to talking to you in about a week or so, a little bit more about your book. Thanks again for your time.
Oh, fantastic. Always a pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.